Odyssey Sports Station. Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm not going to get no interview. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say, you
Happy Monday.
Had a pretty good weekend, Jeff.
Well, I mean, the bright side, you weren't bitten by a shark, were you?
I was not.
You were not. And I think we could all be grateful. And I don't even mean to make light of it, but there's something about a shark attack that captures the imagination or terrifies or touches something viscerally down deep, doesn't it?
It was at the place where my parents used to have their house.
Is that true?
Yeah. Carillon Beach.
Is that the, so they were.
Because my aunt was in town, and my aunt, she lives in Birmingham, but like they were keeping up with it, and she was telling me, and I was like, God, that just sounds horrible.
So there was one woman who was attacked who has lost her arm in the attack.
Do we know what kind of shark it was?
Well, you've come to the right place.
Okay, thank God.
You've come to the right.
We did not know when we were talking about it.
You've come to the right place. Well, we don't know for sure because they had a line of sharks. Sharks are hard to identify. It's hard to get the other sharks to give up the shark.
They don't talk either.
Sharks notoriously mum about this stuff. Like, you know, so it's not completely clear. But there was one woman who lost her arm, and then there were two teens, 15 and 17. The 45-year-old woman lost her arm, and then two teens, 15 and 17, one in critical condition and one minor foot injuries. And we don't know. I guess sometimes they do know. Sometimes they can tell by the nature of the bite, right? You can tell by dental identification the nature of the bite. Plus, everyone's got a Ring camera now.
And yeah, I was going to say, I would assume at some point there's some visual.
But the theory is, everyone seems to think that it's bull sharks.
Okay.
And not some rogue, jaws, white shark. These shark attacks were 4 miles apart. Where were they, Jeffrey? Like, where are we talking?
This is the panhandle. Basically,
the Florida part of the panhandle.
Right. Panama City Beach, which is like in between Destin and Panama City.
Okay, so, these attacks were 4 miles apart, but it's not one rogue shark, according to the experts that I have consulted with, read about on the internet. It's likely bull sharks. In fact, most bites worldwide seem to be, most fatalities, white sharks, great whites, but a lot of the attacks, bull sharks. Now, let me ask you this. When you have been down on the, do you worry about sharks? Do you go into the water or do you just go into the water that's represented by a swimming pool?
Neither. So my perfect beach vacation down there is the only time I ever touch sand is if I'm in a trap on a golf course. But I love the
so you
area.
You don't go into the water.
You know me. How long do you think it would take for me to get bored on the beach?
Well, I'm not actually advocating beach. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not the bring an umbrella to the beach.
Yeah.
I would walk up to the water and put my toes in the water at the very least.
When I go into the water, I do not think about it. So
you don't think about the sharks?
No.
So
I mean, I have been down there at times when there have been reported shark attacks, and that just gives me more incentive. Okay, I'll see y'all tonight.
This to me, and I know this is a controversial take, but give me a Great Lake over an ocean. Now the ocean has the smell, has the drama, has the tides coming in and out. There's nothing as magnificent as an ocean, but in terms of actually enjoying the water.
I mean, what's the biggest predator in a lake?
Give me a northern lake. There's no freaking cottonmouths. There's no shakes, star sharks. There's no jellyfish. You can see the bottom. They're clear. Give me a northern lake over certainly a southern lake. Love a lot about the south, not the lakes.
Well, let's be real. Our lakes are swamps.
And honestly, over an ocean. Because an ocean, there's all kinds of ways to die in an ocean. Now, these people were evidently, what happens is the bull sharks are chasing the bait fish. The bait fish, you can imagine the bait fish. They're terrified. Did you see the video of the duck trying to get away from the shark over the weekend? You saw that?
No.
It was on Facebook. It was a duck. It was a freaking duck swimming above the water around and around and around in circles trying to get away from this duck. Finally gets to the beach. And the shark comes within inches of the damn duck. So that's a close call. But anyway, these bait fish are trying desperately to get away from the shark. And so they go, let's go shallow water. Mr. Shark, probably not going to find us there. So they go flying in near the shallow water. And there people are playing, standing there, thinking, I'm not going to go out deep because the sharks are out deep. And what do you know? All of a sudden, a shark is brought to them. Next thing you know, chomps on them. We got a problem.
Why could this duck not get airborne?
Did you see the duck
now? I'm watching it right now.
I don't understand the duck at all.
So is the duck
hurt?
Why
does the duck not fly?
Because the duck
is... anyone of you have missed this? The duck is just going,
the
zooming
around. Trying to launch, and then, oh, man, then we had a hero with a shark.
It's incredibly suspenseful.
Trying to throw a football, but he double-clutched it. He was like Dak in a playoff game. He was afraid to pull the trigger.
It's incredibly suspenseful. You don't know watching that video if the duck or the shark are going to win.
I totally agree.
It is the definition of it, much more suspenseful than the NBA Finals, just for example, which we will get to, by the way. Oh, today on the radio show, we got Dan Devine coming up next. Then we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And because of that, we're not going to talk a lot about the NBA Finals. And A, because it feels like it's over. May not be. Like, Suns were up 2-0 on the Bucks, right? Not so long ago.
Team has won a road game yet.
No team has won. We know that these things start when someone's on the road or whatever the hell that is. But anyway, we'll talk about that extensively with Dan Devine in the next segment and with Chris Harrington as well. But now I want to tell you about this duck that escaped from the shark. Okay, Jeffrey, I do have some important shark questions since we're on this topic.
All right.
Okay. What country, first of all, how many unprovoked shark bites do you believe there were? And there are provoked in this way. If you're out there like trying to feed a shark with a fish,
yeah,
and it bites your hand, that's considered provoked.
Yeah.
Like if you're a Mr. Sea Diver and you that wouldn't be included in this, right?
Okay.
Or if you've got a spear fishing and you're trying, this is just people minding their own damn business who are bitten by sharks. Across the world in 2023, any guess as to how many there would be? Unprovoked shark bites.
I'm going to say like 100 maybe.
Not bad. 69.
Okay.
69.
Nice.
69 unprovoked shark bites. Now, who do you think leads? What country leads in unprovoked shark bites?
All right, my instinct on this one is Australia.
No, but
us.
But it's us.
Okay.
Yeah, it's us.
Numbers.
And then Australia.
Yeah,
it's so of the 69, 36 are American shark bites, and 15 are Australian shark bites. Now, having said that, the Australian shark's much more efficient. They have 4 fatalities in their 15 unprovoked shark bites, whereas the U.S. had 2 fatalities in its 36 unprovoked shark
bites. I would imagine they have more great whites.
They have more great whites. Exactly right. So 36 bites in the U.S., 2 fatalities. Australia, 15 bites, 4 fatalities. And then it's a big drop off to New Caledonia and assorted other smaller countries.
They got other stuff going on down there.
With 3, they had 3 bites, 1 fatality, etc. So worldwide, there were 69 bites and 10 fatalities. Now, let's go. Let's break this down, because that's what we do. We don't. We're We're analytics guys here.
Yes.
On this show.
We're process.
What state do you think leads in unprovoked shark bites?
Florida.
Florida is a clear winner with 16 unprovoked shark bites, zero fatalities. Who do you think's two?
Show me like Texas.
Hawaii.
Hawaii. Come on.
It seems like, as you would say, free space.
That's
right.
That's,
yeah, although is it really America? It's paradise. It's paradise over there. The others with shark bites. Texas did not have a shark bite.
Okay.
Florida was 16. And then you've got Hawaii with 8. New York, you don't think of New York. You think of loan sharks, maybe, but whatever kind of sharks,
right.
But not. But they do. They've got beaches up there in New York. 4. Kind of surprised
them.
That Hamptons. They're tasty.
Mm-hmm.
California is pretty low. Wouldn't that surprise you?
Because the water's so cold.
Oh, people don't go in.
Correct.
But aren't they surfing out there in California?
I mean, they are, but everybody's like in wetsuits, and it's not like it's. It's no one really, you don't go into the water at the frequency of the other places.
California, 2, and one fatality.
And really, like, really most
That's
of the water is
right.
Southern
People
California.
People aren't just swamp, aren't, in Southern California, they are. They're all getting the water, right?
A little bit, but I'm telling you,
it's
that
still
was
cold?
That was another culture shock moment because I grew up going to the Gulf where the water's warm and. One night, freshman year, everyone's like, we're going at midnight. We're going into the water. And, like, I thought I was going to die of hypothermia. It's like, that was so cold.
So the others, Florida, Hawaii, New York, California. The other bites in North Carolina, South Carolina, and New Jersey. That's where you have your shark bites. And then finally, wrapping up the shark portion of our show, what advice do you have besides don't go in the water? I have tips on avoiding shark bites.
I mean, pay attention. The lifeguards know, like, when the...
Swim in front of a lifeguard is on there. So they know when sharks are in the area.
Correct.
Well, this is what it says. Remove reflective jewelry.
All right.
I can do that. I certainly
Sold.
Can do that. Sold. Avoid areas where people are fishing and leave the water if you see abundant fish bait.
When you
see those cute little fish flying around, a shark could be following.
Correct.
That makes sense. Swim in groups. That would seem mostly to be to reduce your chances, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's thinning out the herd, but I would say swim in group if you're the best swimmer.
I don't think you're going to outwin. I don't think it comes down to who's the best swimmer. You're not trying to outswim the shark. You can't. You're not the damn duck trying to outdo
No, but you're trying to outswim everybody else.
Are you or are you just, it's just strength in numbers. If there's 10 people, the odds are that shark's not going to get you. It's going to get one of the other 9.
Right, but I still want to be the fastest swimmer because if someone gets left behind, sorry.
Don't wander too far from shore. Swim in front of a lifeguard and don't swim in dim or dark light. So there you go. There's your shark news for the day. Again, we got Dan Devine coming up next. Chris Harrington after that. We'll talk a lot about these.
Have any of the marine biologists... You know, the whales, the killer whales, the orcas have been bucking their heads.
I've seen them. Yeah,
right.
I've seen the
videos
of those.
Are we saying, is this the shark saying this is our summer? Is this, you know, saying like, hey,
like
we're
the Jets versus the
like,
Sharks.
Forget about us.
Right.
You know? We're still here.
Yeah, right. We're still here. Asserting their claim. What percentage of people in a survey said that they'd like to be bitten by a shark if there was no serious injuries? Because they'd get a cool story. What percent?
So what percent of people are insane?
But they know in advance there's going to be no serious injuries. That you know that. It's guaranteed. Now, you don't know at the time, but I'm telling you.
Like 10%.
Yeah, pretty good. 15%. Yeah. 15% want the cool story, bro. So there you go. We got NBA finals to talk about. We've got, it's U.S. Open Week. Scottie Scheffler seems to be good at golf. The Vols are heading to, Peyton Manning would appreciate it, Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
So that is all good. And then we have more Caitlin Clark stuff to talk about. What would we ever do if we didn't have Caitlin Clark stuff to talk about? And Danny Hurley will make his decision today.
He is milking it.
So we got... all kinds of sports to talk about. Before then, I want to tell you about my weekend a little bit. I did go see the Mayors play basketball.
I saw you tweeting.
And this was at Ridgeway. It was the city versus the county. The city mayor led one team. That's Lee Harris. That's Paul Young. And the county mayor, Lee Harris, led the other team. And Yeah, you can read my piece at the Daily Memphian, or you can see my tweets. I turned into a videographer. New frontier for me, trying to capture the athleticism, the power of the two mayors. And I have to say, easy to, like, between them, they were one of four from the field.
Okay.
With one assist. The only bucket, Paul Young, early in the second half, he obviously, at halftime, you know how you go in and sometimes and you reset and you say, what do I got to do here? Like, and he very clearly came out and he was more aggressive at the start of the second half.
Made an adjustment.
He got an assist early and then gets a bucket.
Yeah.
And so that was the only bucket. Lee Harris in the first half put up a lamentable shot. Oops. That's me forgetting to turn off my phone. A lamentable shot where he hit the side of the backboard, that's never good. And Paul Young had a couple of putbacks that did not go in. And that was too bad. The truth of the matter is, though, like, they're playing with high-level college guys, you know, who are done, and guys who are playing in Europe and, you know, whatever else. They were playing with real basketball players.
Yeah.
You know. And given that they were playing, like, they're actually on a church league, they're both in their 40s.
Yeah.
It's hard in your 40s to play a game of full court basketball. You'll die.
Especially with kids.
Within three, right. And so you can tell, honestly, that Paul Young has played a fair amount of basketball. And Lee Harris, you can tell, like, Lee Harris, either one of the videos that I put up is of a pass that should have been an assist, sees the floor, whips a pass underneath the ball. They're both actually commendable athletes for 40-year-old mayor people who are doing other stuff. And but what really struck me about the entire event, nice event, it was for an organization called Heal the Hood, which is which one of the many excellent organizations in Memphis that tries to provide programming and content and a path forward for kids that does not involve guns or violence, and so commendable organization. And so it was a nice event. But what struck me was I'd put this stuff on social media. And then I'd get comments, and maybe this is just, it's just Twitter and X, but this is a new Twitter/X. I'm coming to even further appreciate what a toxic place that is. Because I'd post something like that, and someone would post, I hope they get their windows broken. Or, why aren't they, you know, could they fix the city, could they fix the city instead? Or, they're both clowns. Or... And I just, like, what prompts you? Here's the truth. Neither Paul Young nor Lee Harris think that a game of basketball on a Saturday afternoon is going to fix everything in the city. It's not their plan A. It's not their plan B. It's not their plan C. It's not their plan D. It's not their plan Z. They were asked to participate to help an organization raise money that does good things.
It's a fundraiser,
and
right?
So they took, yeah, it was a fundraiser. So they took a couple hours. Tony Allen was there. He was honored. He took some time. Lionel Hollins was there. He was coaching one of the teams. He took some time. Jerry Green was there. It was a bunch of people who were just said, yeah, I could stay home drinking a beer or doing whatever on a Saturday, being with my family. Or I could go out and devote 2 hours. And the idea that produces snark and negativism, and it just seems crazy to me. What is wrong with those? Like I say, you people, most of you people listening aren't doing that. I just don't get it. I also then, I wrote a column about that. And then I wrote a column today about Elon Musk and his mega computer. And I talked to Ted Townsend, who's the head of the Greater Memphis Chamber. And, I mean, honestly, it's just thrilling. It is. Of course there are things to be wary about. Of course there are things to be wary about. Ted Townsend is wary about them. Like, there needs to be some assurances that the power and water supplies in this region can handle it. And Ted is concerned about that too. Of course, the truth of the matter is when it comes to water, this may be a good thing because it seems like it will accelerate the development of a, and now we're getting into lingo, gray water facility. But that's just a facility that basically recycles industrial water so you don't have to be using, Charles has pointed this out before, the water that we use in our toilets in this country is incredibly clear, beautiful, clean water, right? And it doesn't really have to be. And it's also true that you don't need beautiful, clean drinking water to power a mega computer, right? And so maybe the hope is that this is going to accelerate plans for the gray water treatment facility that should be built. But the idea that a couple months ago there was a call placed to Memphis and said, listen, you're on the outside looking in. There's seven or eight cities that are ahead of you. But if you want to get involved, you can get involved. And that they made this happen. And the biggest, most powerful computer in the world, $1 billion investment is going to be made in Memphis because of the work that those people did in the ensuing months. I know it's popular to look at our public officials as a real bunch of bungling idiots or selfish or greedy or lining their pockets, whatever it is. And mind you, we got some OR. But as Ted Townsend pointed out, the cooperation and the expertise of the city, the county, folks at MLG&W, the TVA, is incredibly impressive. And the Greater Chamber is incredibly impressive to get this done. And Ted Townsend, by the way, in and of himself is an interesting story. Here's a guy who went to the University of Memphis. But when I talked to him yesterday, he was driving home from Bartlett, where he spends every Sunday. His mother's 86, and his dad passed away in 2020. And every Sunday, they built a screened-in porch in their house, his parents did. And they spent a lot of time on that screened-in porch. And now that his dad is gone, every Sunday, he goes over there, and he works on the house and the lawn and potted plants. And yesterday, put up a hook for, you know, that kind of thing. Here he is. He's literally a week earlier, he was touring Elon Musk through the facility. And the next day, he went to see his mom and couldn't tell her anything because it's top secret.
Right.
This week, he went to help his mom again. And she had all kinds of questions because she goes to Ellendale Baptist Church. And there at church, everyone's asking about her son. And what's this deal with Elon Musk and the computer? And by the way, she said, all these people on Nextdoor are saying terrible things.
No way.
Yeah. All these people on Nextdoor are saying terrible things. And so Ted Townsend explained to his mom what a boon this is going to be for the city of Memphis. And I just think it's, at a time when this city needed a win and needed something to disrupt the relentlessly negative narrative that I saw again by just posting about a basketball game, this was a massive win for the city. And Ted, who is his dad was the first person his family went to college. He ended up being a postal carrier. And in Raleigh, he had one of the last walking routes in Raleigh, and he would sometimes when he was in high school and college, a lot of times he'd walk the route with his dad, and he said his dad was just a rock star. That like people, you know, his dad was the kind of person who would look out for the seniors on his route. His dad was the kind of person who was loved by the, you know, by the people on the route. Who when it was particularly hot, they'd bring out a cold towel and make him put it around his neck because they worried about him. He saw the care that this community has for each other. He's really in that way, at that granular level, saw the best of this community. And so maybe I'm a sucker, but when I hear Ted Townsend talking about what's good for Memphis, I don't just hear a guy who's the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. I hear a guy who has lived in this community his entire life, who is passionate about this community, and who has pulled something off that is really remarkable. So if you want to read either of those columns, they're up at the Daily Memphian. But that's how I spent my weekend. Again, we got Dan Devine coming up next, then Chris Harrington after that. We could pick off one or two of these sports topics, Jeffrey. Let's just start with Danny Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
What are the betting odds on this? Have you seen? The odds were that he's taken the Lakers job. It seemed to be favored that he has taken the Lakers job. Today is the day. He was in Madison Square Garden watching Billy Joel over the weekend, and today he is going to be making his decision. Do you have any guess, or if Danny Hurley asked you what to do, do you have any advice?
So BetOnline has the odds. He's minus 400 to be the Lakers head coach. So to win $100, you'd have to lay down 400. And then to return to UConn is plus 300, so 3-1. So it's at 80%.
That he's going to L.A.
That he's going to L.A. I mean, my advice is, what are your objectives? I mean, are you at the point where you're trying to, do you want to be remembered as the greatest college coach of all time? Is that what you want to be remembered, or do you want a new challenge? Do you want a new horizon? And I suspect the next big question is, and the question I would have for him is, well, what are the offers?
Well, that's the thing. You can easily, you've got to imagine that underneath it all, he does have a preference here as to which job he wants.
Right.
And they're very different jobs. They're very different jobs in very different places. And we talked about this with David Jones. People have all kinds of reasons for making the decisions they make. And so there is the argument for staying in UConn is, I'm great at this job. I can be one of the greatest college coaches of all time. I'm in an area where I'm appreciated, where I feel comfortable, where my wife and family feel comfortable. And that LA thing is an S show. I'm going to be LeBron's. How is that going to work? I don't know if you've noticed. He's getting older. Anthony Davis is getting older. I don't need all that. And what I'm trying to do here is just leverage this to get the job I want with more money. And then you stay in UConn because you've gotten a bigger pile of money. That makes total sense to me. Having said that, that's assuming that that's what he wants. He may, in the end, just want to coach at the highest level, the Lakers job. He may want that stage. It's a dramatically bigger...
Well, I think there's also one other thing to remember.
He may want to coach the NBA. Uh-huh.
The other thing, though, is oftentimes to get UConn, the job that, in your scenario, let's lay it out, that's the job that you prefer.
Yeah.
The difference, though, is for them to pay you more money, that's got to come from somewhere. Does that mean that you're going to have less NIL money? Does that mean that you're,
No. You've got to make sure that the situation.
You see what I'm saying?
That's all coming from
the same place. Whereas if the Lakers just give you a dump truck full of cash, that doesn't take away money from the salary cap.
No, that's very clearly true. Let's be honest. If this is just about money, then he goes to L.A. If he stays at UConn, you know it's not just about money.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Right?
I think if it's just a business financial decision.
Then you just go to L.A. If it's... If it's not, so if he stays in UConn, you know it's about something other than money. But I think in order, in the end, the money is really significant either place. We're not talking about a trifling amount of cash here either way.
Yeah, I mean, his most recent extension is still nearly $10 million a year.
So then in the end... This should be about do what you want. Which job do you want? That in the end, that's it, right? It shouldn't be about, unless the cash is so wildly disparate, right?
It's the Monty Williams. In the end, Monty Williams turned down Detroit, I don't know, four or five times, and then they finally put so much money in front of him, he's like, I guess I'm going to go be the Pistons coach.
Right. So I suppose there is a, the gap could be so vast that you take the job that you don't want over the job that you want. But given that you're rich either way, and given that we only have one chance to go through this life, that's how I would break it down. I'd say, listen, unless the money is just, it is irrefutable what the right choice is because it's so much money, I should decide what I want to do and then do that. I should decide what I want to do and do that. And
it's also possible that is what he's doing.
And it's very possible it is what he's doing. And it's also possible that he's doing it and trying to make sure over the weekend that he is getting, that he has enough money for him, for NIL, for everything else, and that it is workable here. Or I suppose it's possible that he's being respectful to UConn by taking the weekend to think about it, and then he's just going to go to LA. That's what the betting market seemed to think.
Yeah, I mean, it's also possible, you know what, he's just tired of dealing with the world that is in college basketball, and I don't really see how this thing gets fixed quickly. And so he's like, you know what?
Let's just go do it.
Let's go do another challenge.
Why not do it on the biggest stage that there is,
right,
which is LA?
It's the Lakers job.
Be kind of fun. I gather, I've never done this, I gather living in LA, if you're rich, not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal. I would also say, though, like, you got to be really rich. I mean, it's one of the most expensive, inconvenient places you can possibly live.
So you don't think $12 million a year is rich enough?
I mean, you're certainly not like slumming it. But the other thing about being in LA is like there are people that like that's their petty cash.
Well, that is certainly true. You are not among the rich,
right?
The truly rich in LA, if you've got.
I mean, if you make $10 million a year, whatever, $15 million.
But you are royalty. You're the Lakers coach.
You have, that's the main thing. You have status.
All right. You have an opinion on Caitlin Clark? Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Was she not selected for the team, or was she left off the team? That's the way that they phrased it. The way they phrased it on Sportsmanlike. And I thought it was an interesting way to, and we'll probably talk more about this in the next segment. I mean, in the next hour. We got Dan Devine coming up and Chris Harrington after that. But was she not selected for the team, or was she left off the team?
So not selected would mean she didn't earn her way?
Selected, I think, implies we were just trying to put together the best team, and that was, and she's very clearly not one of the best players, and so that's, she wasn't selected for the team. Left off the team suggests, like, there were reasons she was consciously left off the team.
I think it's the latter. I think there are reasons that she was left off the team. I mean, you're now seeing subsequent reporting that there was consideration of, if she didn't play a lot, what would the reaction be?
I find that. So this is Christine Brennan, who is a terrifically accomplished sports columnist over at USA Today, and an incredibly nice woman. And I know her mostly because when I would cover Olympics, like, she is rink head. Like, that's what you call people. Like, seam heads are baseball writers, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was a rink head. And, like, she was one of these people who knows everything about figure skating. And the rest of us who are covering figure skating once every 4 years.
What's the score?
We walk up. Now, Christine, what's exactly a Lutz again?
Mm-hmm.
What's a cow tie? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. So it's a triple Lutz. And she's incredibly patient, lovely, incredibly nice woman. And has been spectacular, honestly, writing about some of the complicated issues of women's sports over the decades, and has suffered some of the same double standard as a writer covering sports that some of these athletes have as well. So, but she reported that one of the reasons she was left off the team was that there was concern that when she didn't play significant minutes, that her fans would be outraged. And whatever you think of her, whether she should have been on the team or should not have been on the team, she's not at this point one of the, you know, seven best players. She's just not.
Yeah.
So with the idea was, is they were trying to avoid the backlash that would follow from Caitlin Clark's legions of fans if she didn't get significant minutes, and that's one reason they were left off the team. She was left off the team. I'm kind of astonished. Who leaks that story? Like, where's the...
Somebody probably on Team USA that actually wanted Caitlin Clark.
I was going to say, where's the... Because it only makes Team USA look awful.
Yeah.
Like, if Team USA wants to explain this in a way that makes sense to people, they just say, oh, well, she's a terrific player, but right now she's not one of the 12 best players. There's no dishonor in that. She's a terrific player. She's a terrific young player. She's coming along. She's rookie of the month and whatever else. And she's probably a big part of our future, but this is just taken purely on the merits, and we put together the best team. When there's reporting out there that what they were thinking about was, oh no, what are we going to do when all those Caitlin Clark fans, and it also, by the way, suggests that maybe there were people on the team who didn't want her on the team.
That's my conclusion.
And that plays into the entire narrative of petty resentment. Well, we can get like that. That is, it's almost institutionalizing. We hear this as Caitlin Clark has, as everything that's unfolded over the last few weeks has unfolded, the current players have been cast as petty, jealous, fair or not. We'll get into that at some point, whatever. And so this sort of institutionalizes that idea that it's Caitlin Clark against the world. They don't want her on their team because they're already jealous of the attention she's gotten. So screw you, double bird Caitlin Clark. And that it wasn't just on merits that she was left off. It was on resentment that she was left off, or fear of backlash for fans, or things that have nothing to do with her basketball.
Yeah, it would support that claim.
And that doesn't make them look good. That's why I get back to who the hell would leak this if that really was one of the reasons. Unless it's someone from Caitlin Clark's team. I don't know who would leak that. It just makes them look awful.
I don't think it's Caitlin Clark's team because I don't know if
they wouldn't be privy to it.
Correct. I think like a lot of things, when you have these committees and you have groups of people.
People disagree.
It's like think of it like we got the draft coming up. Not everyone in the Grizzlies draft room is going to agree on certain prospects. Someone's going to stump for somebody. And to me, it's probably someone that was in the room that wanted Caitlin Clark on the team.
All right, we're going to take a break. Dan Devine coming up next. I will tell you that this is one of the easiest weeks for me to talk about Oak Hall every single week. I always love talking about Oak Hall. But it's Father's Day. And if you are getting someone something for the father in your life or the grandfather in your life, I will tell you, opening up a package and getting something that is you don't want, it's one of the real trials of fatherhood because you got to pretend you like it. When you get a gift from Oak Hall, you will not pretend you like it. I love, love, love the things I have from Oak Hall. There's certain pieces of clothing that you get that when you put them on, they just make you happy. And they make you happy and they make you think about the person who gave that piece of clothing to you. The clothes are beautiful. The people are incredibly helpful. Gift cards, if that's the way you want to go, also available. But I am telling you, this is simple. This is easy. It is Father's Day. No better place, whether it's a father, a grandfather, father-in-law, no better place to go this week than to see our friends at Oak Hall. Dan Devine coming up next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
92.9 FM ESPN is Memphis's sports station and the biggest name in the Mid-South online and on the phone thanks to Odyssey. The Odyssey app at 92.9ESPN.com. Smart speakers simply say play 92.9 ESPN. Thanks so much for making us Memphis's sports place. We wanted to build something special where you could come and listen, enjoy, and have some fun. It's a legacy of sports in Memphis. On the Odyssey app, say to your smart speaker, play 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
As a roofer, spring means the start of my busy season, which means I've got to get organized with help from Beacon. I can save time with Beacon Pro Plus and 24/7 access to live pricing, delivery tracking, order history, and more. Plus, this spring, I can earn $1,000 and the chance to win a $25,000 backyard renovation just by buying my CertainTeed shingles online with Beacon. No purchase necessary. Now that's what I call a spring cleanup. Visit BECN.com for official rules and to start earning entries.
Introducing Now. Reliable internet with unlimited data for $30 a month, all in. No commitments, no hidden fees. Now that's calming. Like floating on a cloud, but not in a scary way. More like in a, this cloud is made of cotton candy and it's tasty kind of way. Ooh, that's good. Feeling calmer already. Because Now internet comes with no worries and plenty of peace of mind. Knowing that you've made the best decision. Cheers to you, my friend. The choice is easy. Turn chill mode on with Now Internet, backed by the Xfinity Network. Now, excuse me, gotta run. I see a massage chair with my name on it.
Get Now Internet starting at $30 a month. It's better tech at a better price and better than 5G home internet. Turn chill mode on at Xfinity.com/now. Restrictions apply. Speeds up to 100 megabits per second. Actual speeds vary. Pricing subject to change.
NBA Finals are here, and FanDuel's giving you the chance to win alongside the champions. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's right, $200. You can then use it on same-game parlays, live bets, and so much more. You like Luka? You like Luka and everything he's done transcendent in these playoffs? Go Luka. You like the Celtics finally getting it done? Bet Celtics. Either way, any winning $5 bet for new users, you get $200 in bonus bets. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's C-A-L-K-I-N-S. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. That's the promo code. Take a shot at $200. FanDuel is, of course, official sports betting partner of the NBA. It's safe, it's secure, you get your money fast. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789.
Your window into affordable luxury is Pella Windows and Doors of Memphis.
At Pella, we offer quality replacement windows at any budget.
Can't believe the price of my new windows. They were so affordable.
If I knew I could afford windows and doors as gorgeous as these, I would have chosen Pella Windows and Doors of Memphis years ago.
Right now, save 25% on your entire project or get 50% off installation.
The highest quality, the greatest value.
Choose Pella Windows and Doors of Memphis, your window into affordable luxury.
Life is fast and furious. Sometimes you need a boost. The Shot Nurse can help with lipo B12 injections, increase energy, improve mood and sleep. It even helps with allergies. Or boost your immune system with our Tri-Immune Booster, packed with vitamin C and zinc. It gives your body a head start at fighting off illness. With 3 locations throughout the Mid-South, we can get you in and out quickly. The Shot Nurse is your wise choice.
Protection you need with the touch.
Do you have 3 ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy 3 times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-700-6898. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you. Except he's only on number 2. Call Term Provider at 800-700-6898. That's 800-700-6898. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-700-6898. 800-700-6898.
Our lives aren't like they used to be. They're busier. Early morning Zooms, grabbing coffee to make that in-office meeting, getting to your kid's soccer game on time. Life is different, and so is advertising. To reach any audience, you need your message out there in all media, broadcast to streaming, on screens, and right to the ears of your customers. And that's what we do at Odyssey. Let's build a media campaign that targets the customers you know and want to reach more of, right here in our community. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Calkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, Dan Devine writes about the NBA for Yahoo, talks about the NBA on the podcast, the Essential Podcast, No Cap Room. Just go ahead wherever you get your podcasts and type those words in, No Cap Room, and you can hear Dan more than you do the 15 minutes on my show every week. Follow him on Twitter or X at Your Man Devine. So, Dan, what's the story of this? The first two games?
The Celtics can get whatever shot they want whenever they want it, and the Mavericks can't. I think that's a lot of it. Yeah, I mean, it makes there's a frustrating component, I think, for a lot of analysis of this, because you want to be able to say, you know, here's Jason Tatum rising to the moment and taking the game by the scruff of his neck and like ascending to the ranks of the greats, like. But that's not what this Celtics team is, and not what it has been for whatever 8 months or however, you know, since the opening tip in October. This is a team that is built on, it's like a whack-a-mole game. Somebody pops up, you hit that, whatever pops up with the hammer, and then somebody else pops up somewhere else, and you can't get enough of them. You can't plug up enough holes in the dam. There will be a leak springing somewhere. Last night, it's Drew Holiday, because Jason Tatum drives to the basket 29 times. Jaylen Brown drives to the basket 23 times. That consistent downhill attacking collapses the defense, and then it's swing, swing to the corner. Drew Holiday. It's Drew Holiday acting like a 6'4" center in the dunker spot. It's Drew Holiday running the floor in transition because Dallas is constantly trying to plug leaks elsewhere. And it's part of it is just the, you know, if you have perimeter defenders that can be exploited, one ball screen or one isolation, one guy beats you off the dribble, everything collapses from there. Otherwise, you're giving up a steady stream of layups. And the Boston Celtics don't have that problem on the other side, because as it turns out, when you can throw out Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum as your four wing, you know, perimeter defenders, and then, you know, Al Horford can dial it up on a switch now and again, Kristaps Porzingis in drop coverage. Like, there just aren't a whole lot of places to crack the Celtics open. Boston's having an easier time getting what it wants, and Dallas, outside of Luka Doncic, has a battering ram, which we saw be pretty effective for about a quarter and a half until that, you know, runs out of gas and you need somebody else to pick up the slack and nobody else on Dallas is doing it. Dallas is having a really hard time generating good looks and cashing out the ones they get. And that, to me, is the terms of engagement in the first two games have been entirely set by Boston. And that's a gigantic reason that we're heading back to Dallas 2-0 Celtics.
And it, because of the way that has happened, it feels, I mean, what, we'll see. Like, the Suns were up 2-0, right? So,
sure.
But it feels futile. Like, they're just lining up and beating them, particularly defensively. Like, you, there's, Luka hasn't been bad. Obviously, Kyrie hasn't been good. But how much of Kyrie not being good is that he can't get any of the stuff that he usually gets, because there's no room, you know. It feels, and maybe I'm just recency bias guy, it feels futile for Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Kidd's a hell of a lot smarter than me, so maybe Jason Kidd looks at it and sees some tactical levers that can be pulled. But, and there's also just, you can play cleaner in theory, right?
Right.
I think 15 turnovers last night, 10 of them were live ball turnovers. So it's like, if the Celtics had 10 steals, and I believe they scored something like more than 2 points per possession off a steal. So guaranteed bucket, and sometimes with the hook of a free throw or a three-point shot off of a steal. So you got to limit those. You know, you're better off throwing the ball into the 50th row rather than putting it in harm's way, you know, live to play another day. So there's that, right? You obviously, 8 missed free throws in a 7-point loss is the
right
kind of thing that's going to make Jason Kidd wake up in the middle of the night, you know. There's stuff to be, there's, you know, things to be had there. it's, and again, this is, I would love to sound smarter than this, but if Kyrie Irving is going to shoot like 30% from the floor and not make a three in the series, it's going to be a short series. And I think that I was talking with my colleague Vinny Goodwill. We did the post-game podcast for Yahoo Sports last night. And one of the things that Vinny said was, you know, I mean, you got to imagine Kyrie's not going to shoot like that again. He's not going to play like that again. And I certainly understand that. In four games against the Celtics this season, he's shooting, I think, 4 for 22 from three-point range, going back to the regular season, and under 40% from the floor. He's got, I think it's like 71 points on 80 shots, and has gotten to the free throw line four times in four games. Like, he's just not getting any oxygen, and he's not creating any. As you mentioned, some of that is he's the 1 6-foot-1 guy, right, or 6-foot-2 guy on the floor, and he's having to deal with 6'4" Drew Holiday, who's built like a middle linebacker, and Derek White, who isn't quite that sturdy, but is sort of 6'4", 6'5", and an excellent defender, able to get around every screen. So Kyrie's never getting a breath of fresh air. And every time he turns the corner, he's staring down, a shrunken-in defense, because they don't have to worry too much about Derek Jones Jr. or Maxi Kleba, who doesn't want to shoot now that he's come back from his shoulder injury. He just clearly does not feel comfortable taking shots. Missed a few early last night, and that was all she wrote for him. If the ball goes to P.J. Washington, like, P.J. Washington has acquitted himself fine through the first two games, but if you're talking about, like, the expected value of a possession, P.J. Washington getting the ball and either taking an above-the-break three rather than one from the short corners, or pump faking and like driving into defense and then shooting a floater. He's making those shots, but Boston will let you take those. I mean, that is a win for the Celtics defense. A contested, like, not at the rim two-pointer. Okay, do that 90 times. And I think that, like, Joe Mazzulla has said all season long, it's about, you know, there's a math battle here. There's a math problem we're trying to solve and we're trying to make impossible for the defense to solve. The Celtics get up, I believe it was 42 three-pointers in game one, 39 in game two. Dallas has not gotten over 30, maybe not even close to 30 in the first two games. I don't have the box scores in front of me. I know for a fact Boston has generated, in both games, in game one and game two, generated more spot-up shots, so like drive, kick, catch, shoot, more spot-up shots in both games one and two than the Mavericks have in the series total. Like, they're just getting easier stuff, and maybe Jason Kidd has some pathways to create some of those things. If you've got a Wonder Boy set, this would be the time to draw it up. If you've got that double secret probation answer, let's see it. Because if you don't have one and you don't get 50 from Luka or Kyrie finally getting loose, I don't know that we're going to be going back to Boston.
It's funny. I look at this here in Memphis through the prism of the Grizzlies. You know, where you try to get what the secret is, seeing who emerges as champion and what's the key and how do we replicate this. And the problem is it is interesting. I think about Ja Morant in this, and he would be hunted in an NBA Finals. And honestly, even when you then think about the draft, like, getting wings who can play both ends of the court is like, it's gold when you get to this level. Now, of course, it's not easy to get Drew Holiday and Derek White and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown all on one team. But it does, I don't know, that's sort of what I'm extracting from this, is those guys are absolute gold.
Yeah, and you go back a couple of years, it's why you take the home run swing on Zaire Williams, right? You look at it and say, if we can get a 6'8", 6'9", with a 7-foot-plus wingspan guy who can switch every screen and shoot threes at a high level, like, there is no place too high to draft that guy, right? It's why Mikal Bridges was not available for four picks or whatever. It's why OG Anunoby is going to get $35 million a year, like, and so on down the line. It's why I have to imagine. I would be fascinated to find out what the negotiations were like when Milwaukee was talking to Portland. Like, if they tried to be like, can you make us a real firm promise you're not going to trade Drew to Boston right after this?
Right.
But, like, yeah, those guys, like, the league has shifted in terms of, like, the regular season the last couple of years. It's the, you know, land of the Giants again. It's Godzilla versus Kong, where you've got Joel Embiid, you've got Nikola Jokic, you've got Giannis, and these are the guys who dictate and impose their will over the course of regular season. And to some degree, it has happened also in the playoffs. I mean, you know, we just saw Jokic do this a year ago, right? But so much of playoff basketball is matchup driven. What is the weak point on an opposing team's like structural makeup, and how do you push on it? So from Memphis' perspective, I think there's two things. One, yes, size and wings, right? Like, so it is a little bit of a danger where you look at it and say, well, Ja's a little too small here. If you've got Desmond Bane guarding up, he might be a little too small. If you're trying to play the three guards with either Kennard or Marcus Smart or whoever, that's kind of small. So I think that's something to look at and say, yeah, you really need, and that's why, you know, whatever you can get from G.G. Jackson and Vince Williams, like, the bigger you can be across those perimeter positions, the better your chances are of holding up defensively. But the flip side of that too is all those guys got to be able to shoot and put the ball on the deck and make something happen. Right. Because like Derek Jones Jr. was an incredibly important part of Dallas's run through the first three rounds, and now every time the ball gets to him, if it's kicked out to the perimeter, it's a gift. Boston's like, thank goodness, okay, go for it. And like in game one, the story of Boston's defense. Speaking too quickly, I apologize. The story of Boston's defense was one on one with Kyrie and Luka only. We are face guarding the other guy. We are not going to let them get shots. Luka starts busting them up with the ISOs in game two, and it's all right. We will show a little bit more help, but it's coming off of Derek Jones Jr. It's coming off of Dante Exum. It's coming off of Josh Green. All these guys who are perfectly serviceable players who made important contributions to Dallas both in the regular season and through the first three rounds. And now when they get the ball with 15 feet of space in front of them in this series, it's basically grim death for that offensive possession. So when you get, it gets harder the further you go, and those guys, a defensive specialist is, you know, has great value, but you got to be able to do both things at this level, and Boston's just got way more of those guys than Dallas does right now.
You mentioned Jason Tatum. And we do like a narrative, right? We like, sure, whether it's Anthony Edwards emerging as the next MJ, or, and then we got Luka. And like, we want this, now we want to be able to point to Jason Tatum, and now he takes his rightful place among the truly. Sure. And this will be odd for him. If it goes this way and they win in five or six and he continues to do what he has done, which is be a good player and an unselfish player and contribute in all kinds of ways, but not a transcendent offensive performance, what are we to make of that and Jason Tatum?
Yeah, and so one of my, this wasn't a hot take, or I didn't think it was a hot take, and I got some response to it in game one, just because I think everything Boston and also everything internet results in some heat at a certain point, but right. I think that the series you're seeing from Tatum is to some degree the season that you saw from Tatum, just like a microcosm of it. There are times where it looks underwhelming, where the two-point shots are like, why are you taking that? Or you're like, that's too many smoked layups, that's too many sidestep pull-ups when you could have gotten something better if you push it a little bit later into the clock. But then you kind of zoom out, and you're like, all right, this guy is leading his team in rebounding. He's guarding centers and playing point guard. The entire offense is generated based on him taking a ball screen or working in isolation and then getting downhill, drawing three guys to him and creating all of those looks. And he plays 42 or 45 minutes, never comes off the court. He's like, he guards everybody on switches. You can feel comfortable on him switching on to Luka or Kyrie or trying to box out Daniel Gafford. Like, there is just, he does everything. It's just, but when he's also shooting, you know, not scoring 20 a game or getting, you know, shooting 40% from the field, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like that is superstar play. And so the analogy I made with the understanding, I hope understanding, that I'm not saying he's this guy,
yeah,
but the quietness of it and the like high floor rising tide lifts all boats thing, it's like maybe he's a little less Kobe and a little more Duncan. And maybe that's kind of the idea where it's like, we don't have to worry about the thing where the opponent can cause the leaks that we can't cover, because we can cover everything. And part of the reason we can cover everything is because we have like a 6'10" point center who we feel comfortable guarding everybody, and also is not going to take the bait and is going to drive 30 times to the rim and has the physicality to be able to do that and never gets tired and doesn't need to come off the floor. And like, when you zoom out, that's a pretty friggin' valuable player. But it's not the highlight reels include way too many missed shots for you to feel good about it. So yeah, I mean, all of which is to say, there is definitely a world where in two games or three games or however long it would take for the Celtics to win, which also, by the way, Kristaps Porzingis left the game with a leg injury, right, and that could be a gigantic swing factor. We have to see what his status is for game three. Everything can change on a trifle in the playoffs, but there is a world where Jason Tatum winds up leading the Celtics in like points, assists, rebounds, and playing point guard and center in this series, and by the end of it, they have outscored the Mavericks by like 50 points in his minutes. And like, how is that guy not the most valuable player in the series? It's like,